true. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the second part of an interview with author Stephen Lendman on 9/11 as the mother of all big lies and the state of America and the world in its aftermath. Stephen Lendman is a writer, syndicated columnist, activist, news TV personality, and radio show host. He currently writes for MoneyNewsNow.com and VeteransToday.com, and hosts a progressive radio show at the Progressive Radio NewsHour on the Progressive Radio Network. He's also author of the celebrated books Banker Occupation, Waging Financial War on Humanity, and How Wall Street Fleeces America, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class War, and just recently a new book called Flashpoint in Ukraine, which is a compilation of 22 geopolitical analysts countering the fraudulent Western narrative on Ukraine and why it matters so much. So here's part two of that interview.
Let's jump to your new book, The Flashpoint in the Ukraine.
The book is a very important book, and most Americans, I would say, know nothing about the Ukraine story. I wanted to write something about Ukraine, and I wrote many articles about it while the crisis was developing and getting very, very, very severe. And I've written three other books. I asked my editor at Clarity Press whether she was planning to do a book on Ukraine, and she jumped on the idea, and she asked me if I would edit it. The book was made possible by 21 other contributors, marvelous people who contributed marvelous content to the book and gave the book the kind of key information that everybody has to know to understand what the Ukraine story is all about. The Ukraine story is really using Ukraine as a pretext, and Russia is the target. Washington wants all former Soviet republics and all former Warsaw Pact countries made part of NATO. It wants U.S. bases on Russia's borders. It wants long-range nuclear missiles targeting Russia's heartland. It wants Russia surrounded by U.S. bases. It wants to transform Russia the same way it wants to transform all the other independent countries. Russia is independent. It's very proudly independent. America wants it made a pro-Western vassal state. Putin is the hero of the Ukraine story. Obama and other U.S. officials are the enemy, the ghost of the 9/11 story. And this has to be turned around. But the propaganda is vicious. It goes on round the clock. It's every day. Putin is bashed. Russia is bashed. Big lies are told. Russia did not invade Ukraine. Russia did not annex Crimea. The Crimeans, by a vote, I still remember the percentage, Cheryl, Crimeans, by a vote of 96.7% with an 82% turnout, voted to join Russia. They were part of Russia until 1954, and they were for about 200 years. They wanted to go back again. Crimeans put it this way, we want to go home. And indeed, they did go home. And the Russian parliament and Putin merely acknowledged their wishes and went along with them. But to refer to it as an annexation, which implies illegality, is another big lie. So if the war began, well, the biggest story about Ukraine, Ukraine did not have the kind of government I would certainly approve of, extremely corrupt, the Yanukovych government, Viktor Yanukovych. But it was democratically elected. It was elected years earlier. America staged an Orange Revolution in 2004, I believe, ousted the Yanukovych government. It was reelected in 2010. America wanted Yanukovych removed because he wouldn't go along with America's plan to have Ukraine turn west instead of east, to become part of the EU, which was really raping and pillaging Ukraine. Yanukovych initially agreed to do it, and then he changed his mind. He did it for very logical reasons. There were wrinkles thrown into the deal, things that weren't brought up initially when he agreed to become part of it. He was targeted for that reason. Get rid of this guy, get other people to take his place, and the scheme was get rid of a Democrat, put fascists in his place, infested with neo-Nazis. And that's exactly what happened. Neo-Nazi infested fascists, replacing a Democratic government. They took over. They usurped power. They have no legitimacy whatsoever. They're running Ukraine. They launched war against the Democrats in southeastern Ukraine, in Donetsk, in Lugansk, in other cities. They wanted these people removed. They've been murdering them. They've been killing civilians. And this has been going on since April. So this is the scheme that's been going on. Get rid of these people. Institute hardline rule across the country and make Ukraine one hardline rule country. No local autonomy, no democratic governments, fascist governments. Well, the people of southeast Ukraine simply won't tolerate this, and they fought back, and indeed they did valiantly, to the point where they have the upper hand now. There is a peace deal that's signed. Will it hold? I don't think so, Cheryl. I think it'll be violated. There are violations right now. They're sporadic, but I think there'll be more serious violations, and America's war of state terror will continue with its stooge government in Kiev waging its war for it. And the war will resume once the Ukrainian forces regroup and decide they have the weapons to go after these people again to be able to continue the war. They couldn't. They were getting beaten very, very badly. And I believe they stopped the campaign to regroup and hope that they could come back and be able to fight more effectively than they did so far. The supposed weapons that the Ukrainians have, weapons not that Russia supplied them with, but weapons that were left by Russian forces as they decided they wanted no part of this thing anymore. They left, they deserted, they either went home or they went back to Russia, and they left their weapons behind them.
Yeah, and it seems to me that Putin has done, and the Russians have done a really good job of trying to avoid war, but it seems like the U.S. and NATO are really provoking them.
Does our government want
a major war with Russia?
It's incredible that anybody in this country would think that way. A major war with Russia comes down to this: nuclear war. I've written about the father of the nuclear navy, Hyman Rickover, in the 1980s. He had very second thoughts about nuclear weapons. In the 1980s, he testified before Congress, and he said to the effect that in any future wars, combatants to win will use any weapons they have. They won't use weapons like nuclear weapons they don't have to use. But to win the war, if it takes using nuclear weapons, they will use them. And Rickover was warning Congress, if there's a war with Russia, it'll be a nuclear war. And if it's a nuclear war, you could say it'll come down to this. World War I was supposed to be the war to end all wars. If there's a nuclear war, it will be the war to end all wars. There won't be another war. Bertrand Russell said, you can either have war or you can have the end of humanity. Albert Einstein said he didn't know what weapons would be used in World War III, but in World War IV, it would be sticks and stones. This is the danger we face.
And it seems like we're really out there provoking it. It's really shocking to me. I also want to ask you if you could comment on the sanctions that Obama and the NATO countries have just imposed on Russia.
The sanctions are very counterproductive. They may end up, ironically, doing Russia more good than harm, Cheryl. It's incredible. Let me explain what I mean by that. The EU stands to be hurt the most by imposing sanctions. They have a great deal of trade with Russia, hundreds of billions of dollars, $400 billion, $500 billion. They've already sacrificed a lot of their agricultural trade. If they sacrifice a lot of their important trade with Russia, then they will take a big, big hit. So they don't want to do this. The European industry absolutely wants nothing to do with this, but American pressure is getting European countries to go along, and indeed they are. But what is Russia doing in response? We haven't seen Russia's later response. We will before too long. But Russia is turning east as opposed to west. It struck a tremendous deal with China, an immense energy deal. I wrote a major article about it, where Russia has an energy deal involving oil and gas that involves hundreds of billions of dollars. It's an incredible deal for both countries. They both benefit greatly. And what may happen in the wake of a deal like this, well, what already has happened is Russia will expand its non-energy trade with China, its defense trade, its technology trade, its trade in other products and services, and this can only grow. And other countries are turning to Russia to trade with, especially South American ones, Asian ones. So Russia is getting less dependent on European trade. It's relying more on other parts of the world. And in the end, it may benefit. And in the end, America and European countries may end up losers.
Now, on the Clarity Press website, it describes your book as
22 political analysts counter the fraudulent Western narrative on Ukraine and why it matters so much. And some of these 22 include Michael Parenti, Cynthia McKinney, John McMurtry, James Petras, Paul Craig Roberts, Mahdi Darius, Nazim Royah, and the list goes on with more various writers and thinkers. Can you let the listeners know where they could pick up a copy of this book?
Oh, it's very simple to do. They could either go to Clarity's website. A simple way to do it would be to go to Amazon. And I'm also told that Barnes & Noble carries the book. I was really thrilled to be able to be involved in the project. I wrote so much about Ukraine, Cheryl, as the conflict was materializing. It began in November 2013, the violence that was instigated in the Maidan Independence Square in Ukraine. And again, this was instigated by the fascists that were trained in countries like Lithuania, like Latvia, like Poland, and then they were brought back into Ukraine. The killings that were done in the Maidan were done by these people. They were armed. They were trained to kill. They killed ordinary Ukrainians. They killed Ukrainian police. The Ukrainian police responded one day violently to the protests that broke out in November. And Yanukovych, for all his faults, came down extremely hard on his police forces and demanded no more of this, and there was no more of this. They stopped it. They really overreacted. And where they should have put down the violence, they just held back. They held back too much. The violence continued. It got extremely heavy, and ordinary people were killed. Police were killed. The coup happened on the 22nd of February. Yanukovych was ousted. The fascists were elevated. They have no legitimacy whatsoever, but they're in power. A so-called chocolate king, Petro Poroshenko, is the new president of Ukraine. He has no legitimacy. He's a billionaire crook. He runs the country. You've got an illegitimate prime minister. Try to remember all of these names. Arseniy Yatsenyuk is the illegitimate prime minister. He's one of the proliferators of big lies. And again, they go on and on, Cheryl, one big lie after another. So the Ukrainian people have no idea what's going on. These lies are repeated in the U.S. media. Americans have no idea what's going on. But the truth is polar opposite to big lies that are repeated over and over again. And it doesn't matter whether you read the New York Times or you watch Fox News, you get the same rubbish. The only difference is the Times is a lot more sophisticated and smooth than Fox News, just the way BBC is.
Jumping back now to Syria again and the situation there in Syria and Iraq, my understanding is that the Syrians were winning the battle against the rebels that were being supported by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Middle East. And maybe you can speak to that for a moment, and then where do you see it going in Syria from here?
Yeah, I think it took the Syrians a while, Cheryl, but they really were winning the battle. How can insurgents on the ground go up against a military which certainly is not omnipotent, but it has heavy weapons, it has fighter aircraft, it has tanks, it has artillery? How can ordinary terrorist fighters with mostly small arms go up against a fighting force like this and prevail? It's impossible, and of course they couldn't do it. So the Syrians really were prevailing, and they're prevailing now. The story, though, is that even though Syria is prevailing, new fighters are coming in all the time. You've got these people being imported from dozens of countries. They're coming in. They're targeting ordinary Syrians. They're going after civilians. They're going after civilian communities. And they're really causing a great amount of mischief in the country, blowing up buildings, sending off car bombs, just mass murder and destruction. And this is what's going on. So you've got terrible carnage going on. And I've written so many articles about both Syria and Ukraine, the horrors that are going on in these countries. Well, they're going on. It'll get worse if America becomes Syria's air force. And if Obama attacks Syria, and it absolutely looks like he will, then we're talking about America declaring war on an independent country that does not threaten America. It's an illegal act of aggression. Anybody can read the law, Cheryl. Anybody can read it and understand exactly what it says and exactly what it means. What George Bush did in Afghanistan, in Iraq, what Obama did in Libya and in Syria, and plans to do directly against Syria, constitutes illegal aggression against countries that don't threaten America. and these are cold, hot facts. And anybody reading international law can understand it perfectly. It's in plain English, very clear, illegal aggression. And what it says is this: no country may interfere in the internal affairs of another for any reason except self-defense. No country can attack another country for any reason except in self-defense. It can attack if it's being attacked, but even then, it can only attack until the Security Council responds. It alone has final authority on whether one country can attack another. Not U.S. presidents, Cheryl, not the Congress, not other U.S. officials, not the Pentagon, nobody except the U.N. Security Council. And the way the council is structured, if one country vetoes what the others want, the resolution goes down. And I can assure you, Russia, and I would imagine China, will not permit America to attack Syria.
So basically then, the Bush administration, Bush and the people around him, and the Obama administration and the people around him who are supporting these attacks really are war criminals.
Oh, absolutely, they're war criminals. They're war criminals multiple times over. You attack another country that does not pose a threat to yourself, you are committing a war crime. You're committing crimes against humanity. And that is very clear. That is an absolute fact. And there isn't any legitimate lawyer in the country, Cheryl, that can dispute that, because it's all there in black and white.
So we were losing the battle in Syria because the rebels that we put in, they were failing. The Assad administration over there, the government was winning. Is ISIS now our creation and we're using it as an excuse so that we can attack Syria, claiming we're going after ISIS, but we really want to, will we really start attacking the Assad government?
Yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal. I wrote one article and I began it saying, ISIS is the pretext, Syria is the target, a regime change is the objective. I mean, that really sums it up in three short statements.
Let's talk about the beheadings a little bit, because
yes.
I read somewhere, maybe it was Press TV, I saw that actually they were saying that the Foley, the first person to be beheaded, was actually killed a year ago.
Yes, I read that.
And I'm wondering, are those legitimate news stories or are those more lies?
Oh, I think there's a very strong possibility that they are legitimate, because these events are always strategically timed, Cheryl. You never see these events happen out of context to something else that may be going on. You may remember, and your listeners may remember, last August, the so-called Syrian chemical weapons attack in Ghouta, a suburb of Syria. Well, the Syrian government had nothing to do with the Ghouta attack. The Ghouta attack was staged by the rogue elements coming into Syria. The same kind of, whether it was ISIL, whether it was Al-Qaeda, whether it was Al-Nusra, there isn't one documented case of Syria conducting a chemical weapons attack against its own people. Not one verifiable documentable case. There are a lot of cases that have been lied about, but Syria had nothing to do with any of them. It was these rebel groups, these terrorists imported from other countries that came in and conducted the attacks. And the so-called Ghouta attack was the most important one of all. The numbers vary. America said 500. France had a much different number, much lower. Britain had a much lower number. Who knows what the real number was? It was probably in the dozens or maybe 100, but it had nothing to do with the Syrian government. But again, these attacks were strategic to give America a pretext to go to war against Syria. And the idea was for Obama to do it then. But the American public was so outraged and protested so loudly in emails, in phone calls, in protests in front of congressional offices, 100 to 1 against doing it, 200 to 1, 300 to 1, Republican congressmen and senators just like Democrat ones. And Obama was simply called down. He couldn't do what he wanted to do. At the time I wrote, Obama's war on Syria was postponed. It was not canceled.
So where is ISIS being trained?
ISIS is trained in Jordan. ISIS forces are brought in from dozens of countries. They're trained in Jordan by U.S. Special Forces and by CIA agents. FBI operatives may be there as well. This is standard practice. The New York Times, several years ago, reported about terrorist elements being trained in Jordan. and I forget the name of the groups that they gave them, but terrorist groups being imported into Jordan and CIA operatives training them. The New York Times reported this. So this is exactly what's going on with ISIS. You've got these elements coming in. You've got special forces involved, CIA, FBI, same dirty deal all over again. So America can wage another imperial war.
So the beheadings were either real or fake, but were done at this point in time to drum up American support to get rid of these horrible people.
Exactly. Look at the support that happened post 9/11. The day before 9/11, Bush had about a 50% approval rating. On the day of 9/11, it shot up to 90%, Cheryl. I remember it vividly. And of course, he went out of office, one of the lowest approval ratings of any U.S. president. It was down around the level of Harry Truman during the Korean War. And Richard Nixon had an abysmal approval rating. But the idea was to turn the American public around, get them on board for America's imperial agenda, and that's the scheme. You've got to get the American public mad. You've got to make them believe that the beheadings of Foley or anybody else is just cause to wage war against a non-belligerent country. And very sadly, Cheryl, most people lap it up where they should absolutely denounce it and want nothing to do with it. But again, these events are very strategically timed. My guess is these beheadings absolutely were timed at this point. And the latest one, the British subject who was beheaded, last summer, Britain's Parliament voted against joining America's coalition to wage war on Syria. Well, David Cameron is now Prime Minister of Britain, is apoplectic, just arousing the British public to get involved in America's war. We'll see whether it succeeds or not. But he wants to get in America's war, even though he knows that the British Parliament voted against it last summer. I think Britain will join the coalition. We'll see what the Arab states do. There's a report in the New York Times today that says Arab states will join the American coalition. But we'll wait. They can say one thing. They can do another. We'll wait and see what they actually do.
What do you think Russia will do if we start bombing in Syria?
Well, that's a very good question. What will Russia do? The last thing Russia wants is a war with America, and Russia will go all out to avoid it. Since the Ukrainian crisis developed, literally Russia, Vladimir Putin, and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov have gone overboard to settle the conflict peaceably. Peaceful conflict resolution. If any two leaders deserve the Nobel Peace Prize, they do. Not Obama for waging one imperial war after another, but these men deserve a Nobel Peace Prize for literally going all out for peace. They will do exactly the same thing if there's a Syria war. They've tried to settle the Syrian conflict responsibly. They've been rebuffed every step of the way. And when they vetoed U.S. resolutions, they did it to avoid war, Cheryl. They didn't to let Syria keep murdering its people. Syria is not murdering its people. Syria is protecting its people. Syria, Bashar al-Assad, is doing what any responsible leader would do to protect his people against foreign invaders. And that's exactly what's going on. The opposition in Syria is mainly nonviolent. The opposition against him outside of the country, being imported, is mainly violent, but you'll never find that out in the U.S. media.
Where would you recommend people go to find out what's really happening rather than listening to the mainstream media, the corporate media?
There are lots of good independent websites. If I could pick one that I would recommend very strongly, it would be Global Research. Global Research is a marvelous website. Daily, it publishes a lot of my articles, but daily, it publishes important information on the major world and national events to tell people exactly what they need to know so they can defend themselves against the big lie, the big lies, and know when these things are proliferated in the U.S. media, they know what's going on, they can spread the word to other people, and this is exactly what they need to do. I hope they will, because if they do, we can avoid the horror is going on now, and we literally have a chance for peace and getting away for one imperial war after another. And I would highlight there hasn't been a single day during Obama's tenure, one term and over a year and a half into the second, there hasn't been one day of peace. There have been only days of war, perpetual war, one war after another.
So we've been lied to about 9/11, about the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria. what can the American people do other than, as you just said, educating yourselves, try and find sources of news that are going to be truthful and turn off CNN and Fox News and all the others that are lying to you? But I know this is a tough question, but can you think of anything else that we can do to resist this and keep our country from becoming a tyranny and also from keeping our leaders from killing people around the world?
Well, I remember quoting what Benjamin Franklin said one time in the forming of the Republic way back, where he was only an observer. He wasn't a participant because he was an old man at the time. And somebody apparently asked him what he thought about the formation of the new Republic. And he said, well, you know, it's wonderful if you can keep it.
If you can keep it.
And his implication was that things may start out marvelously, but in the end, the dark forces are going to come in. They'll be deeply corrupt. And the supposed democracy that was formed will go down the drain, and Americans will lose everything they thought they had. And this is exactly what happened. I would even go further than Ben Franklin and say the Republic was never democratic. It was never formed to be a democracy. It was formed, in the words of John Jay, America's first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the Republic was formed to let people who own the country run it. It was true from George Washington, who the founders wanted to anoint as a king. He decided wisely not to take the job. Two terms was enough, and he was out. But this was a scheme from the beginning, but it only got worse in the succeeding years. Well, you can bet you, Cheryl, you and I would take Washington or Jefferson or Madison or Lincoln any day in place of Obama or George Bush or Dick Cheney or people like that. But that's what we're stuck with. The only way to get around these people is to get good information, go to independent websites, listen to broadcasts like this one, listen to my program, the Progressive Radio News Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. It is so easy these days to get accurate information. I said in an email to you, Cheryl, when I grew up in the 40s and 50s, there was only radio, there was no television, there was no internet. It was tough to get good information. You had to dig it out on your own, and it wasn't easy. And I didn't spend a lot of time doing it, but now it is so easy. I would say to people, if you spend 15 minutes a day looking for solid information on the big issues of the day, you can find it easily. You can know what's going on. You'll know the big lies when you hear them. You'll debunk them. You can spread the truth to other people, and you can help keep America safe. But if you won't do this, you literally risk letting full-blown tyranny take over this country and ending what semblance of democracy there may be left. There's not a lot, but the little that is left will go down the drain because ordinary people simply won't do what they should do. And this is my great fear. I can only hope that people will act this way responsibly. Again, this is so vital to do. There's a marvelous quote from I.F. Stone, the great muckraking journalist of the 1960s, or going back to the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, he urged people to get involved in things like this, and he said, the only campaigns people should wage are the ones they know they'll lose. Because if they keep waging them, and if they pass the baton to others, and if they lose them, and if they pass the baton to still others, then one day, because of the work that they did, somebody will win.
And America
can be the kind of nation that we want it to be. It's a marvelous quote.
Powerful.
His most famous quote was, all politicians lie, and nothing they say should be believed.
Yeah, that one seems pretty accurate. We're just about out of time. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I would just say if Americans don't get on track to literally making this country into the kind of nation we want it to be, then the only thing we can expect ahead is a tyrannical nation, because this is the way they all happen in the end. Good things just seem to disintegrate. The Soviet Union began with high ideals, much higher ideals than what developed. And the things that the people who instituted the Soviet Union wanted to put in place simply never happened. And instead, the people of Russia got tyranny and they got Stalin instead of democracy. I think that sums it up very well. Well, the only way to prevent that is for ordinary people to get into the fight and decide they simply will not tolerate this. They want a country representing everybody. They want equity and justice, and they're willing to put their bodies on the line enough, because if they don't do it, they'll be persecuted, and they'll never have any of the things that everybody deserves. And very sadly, that's exactly what the case is. It's up to us to institute responsible change, Cheryl. And if we don't do it, nobody will do it for us.
Stephen Lendman, I want to thank you very much for being on the show and sharing your vast knowledge and insight about the world we live in today. And let's do this again sometime.
Cheryl, I enjoyed it very much.
And again, you are just listening to the second and final part of an interview with author Stephen Lendman. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.